Good to see everybody tonight. Some people were asking, was there a handout for tonight? No, but there is a handout for Sunday. I have them right here. It's also going out in email. I'm going to go over it here. In fact, I'll do that right now. So what you're going to have is two sets of questions. The first set will be more textual in nature, about the subject or about the assignment. The back side are going to be more discussion questions. I may not go over all of them. But the idea is, like we talked about on Sunday, is to look at some things and make some applications and hopefully get some really, really good discussion and allow you to come into class prepared and ready to go. So tonight I'm going to continue kind of the second half of introductory, and we're going to look a little bit at Abraham, real briefly, Abraham and the giving of the law or the promise to Abraham in Genesis 12. We're going to look at that real briefly. I was going to go into great detail, but I don't think it's necessary, not with the knowledge of this congregation, and I want to spend most of the time in the book of Joshua. As well as that, I also want to look at Moses for a little while tonight. And then a couple of closing thoughts, and then we will dive into the book, Lord willing, Sunday morning. So look for the handout. There'll be one up, here. I'll put some in the back also. I was thinking, I mentioned on Sunday about inspiration, things that inspire us, and I hope that we get inspired with a study like this. And I'll try to do my best to keep it alive and give us some good things to think about. I hope to get the same from you. But there's two people in my life that really inspired me for the Old Testament. And I already said who one of those people were. That was Dave Agee, was one who inspired me, and the other one was Bill Moseley. Those are two men who were very passionate about the Old Testament, and I hope that it rubbed off a little bit. I really appreciate their efforts. All right, let's get right into this here. So for a little bit of review, let's talk about God's promise to Abraham. All right, don't look at the slide. What was the threefold promise to Abraham? You got to say it. This, if you talk, it helps your energy. It gets you through the Wednesday night. What is it? Land, seed, and nation. All right, that's the threefold promise that God gave to Abraham. We're going to talk about how that was kind of built along the way. What of those three do we focus most on, though? Of those three, where does most of our focus get drawn to?
The seed.
And why is that? What's the obvious answer to that? Why are we always drawn to the seed promise? What's the
Christ?
That's right. What's the message? Sometimes I talk about the old Bible class at Florida College, the scheme of redemption. What a class that was! But the purpose of the thought of that class was Christ throughout the Bible. All right. So when we talk about the seed, we're focusing on Christ. We give the other two a little less focus. And it's understandable. It's understandable why we do that. But a couple things that come out. There are two words in the Old Testament. One is seed and one is offspring. They're both the same Hebrew word. Just at the top of your head, every time that we see seed or offspring in the Old Testament, is it always referring to Christ? Yes, no? No, it's not, all right? And the reason why I bring that up, because sometimes, I just want to bring this up, because I think sometimes we get caught up that every time we see seed or offspring, or we read a verse, we want to run right to Christ. And I think there, I don't want to take that away from you, but I want us to be mindful here for a few moments just how important this land and nation promise was to God. I think this is really important, so I want to touch on this a little bit. Over in Genesis chapter 22, if you want to follow along, I may be kind of busy in our Bibles tonight. In Genesis chapter 22, following the sacrifice of Isaac, beginning in verse 16, God speaks to Abraham and says, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand on the seashore, and your offspring shall possess the gates of his enemies. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." I think it's very clear in that passage that God is telling Abraham that you are going to be a great nation. I also think he's alluding to the fact that that great nation is going to be great. It's going to be bright. It's going to send a message, and I'll get to that here in just a moment. Look at Exodus chapter 19. Go over to Exodus chapter 19, if you would. I just want to notice a couple things here. In Exodus 19, this nation, when I think of this, I think of the nation of Israel being a blessing or a light to the world in their time. But look at chapter 19, let's look at verse 5. This is following Israel at Mount Sinai. He says, "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel." So what we want to just remind ourselves of is, while the seed promise is extremely important, the nation and the land promise, some people might argue by say they are as important, but I think they're very important. Because until Christ came, until that point, God had a purpose for Israel as a nation, as a people, and giving them that land. He wanted them to be set and apart. This was the time for them to be holy. This was a place of rest for them. This was a place for them to be a set apart from the rest of the world. As we get into this, we're going to talk about Joshua going in and wiping out the land and wiping out some of these nations. There may be some challenging questions we might want to discuss when we get to that portion of our study. And I think they were to be a light to the world. I think that was very important, that as God's chosen people, as a chosen people, they were to be separate, to be a light to the other nations around them. And we all know the history of Israel. We all know what went wrong. That's not going to be our focus in this class. As I mentioned on Sunday, our focus is really going to be this small window, relatively small window, where Joshua and the people and God are all in a right relationship. And that's what we want to stay focused on. And of course, this is all leading us to Christ. So, thoughts, comments, as I'm kind of ripping through this real quick. All right? So we've got, think about it this way. We've got 400 years of anticipation going in, over 400 years of anticipation going in to the promised land. So what I want to do is I want to highlight Israel's journey. I don't know if you could read all that. But I want to highlight the journey in the Pentateuch. And I've given each one of these chapters kind of a word or two-word description. All right? So just kind of, and all we're doing is rapidly bringing ourselves up to the book of Joshua, is what we're doing here. So we have Genesis, what happened in the book of Genesis. All right? A nation is born. Abraham is called. The promise is given. So I would call that the birth of the nation, as we see that. From there, we go to Exodus. I've given this one the name redemption. We have the deliverance from what? Egyptian bondage, all right? Giving of the law and the Red Sea crossing. Why is the Red Sea crossing so important? So many miracles in the Bible. What stands out about the Red Sea? Is there something significant about that event? Yes. Right.
And the way that God is going to take care of them and their safety.
Right. Do you remember what happened right after they got on dry ground? What did they do? Well, there was some murmuring going on too. Yeah. There was some griping and complaining. Granted, the reason why I always remember the Red Sea crossing, this is just in my mind, this is why I put it up there, is it reminds me that as they crossed on dry land and left Egyptian bondage and the Egyptians followed them, that God brought the Egyptians to a screeching halt. So that's just always stood out in my mind. That's why I think that's significant. Carolyn.
Well, and I think that some of the history, I always believe that God had the people in Egypt for a purpose. And when they were small, they weren't. They weren't through the sea, and at the same time he destroyed that army. He was saying, yes, you were there, but there protection, they were the greatest in the world at the time. Now I'm showing you that I am greater than they are.
Right.
And so that it is a big kind of passing through for
It is. I think passage is a good word. It's a passing. It's a major event in the life of God's people. And of course, the giving of the law. And then we get to Leviticus. We studied this a couple years ago. I still remember that study. I really enjoyed it. And what was that about? That was about how to worship God. It was about the holiness of God. And there was lots of blood. I don't put that up there to be gross or anything, but there was lots of blood. And we talked about that in that class to some detail. Numbers. We get to the book of Numbers, still following the children of Israel. You've got the direction and the wandering. You've got the 40 years, obedience, rebellion, repentance, numbering of the nation. And then finally, we get to Deuteronomy, and you have the law revisited or reinstated. Look for a word there that might fit, but you've got the law being looked at or presented again. And then at the end of the chapter, which we're going to look here in just for a few moments, you have the land assurance, basically God telling Moses, you are going to go take this land. And we'll get to that here in just a moment. So that is a highlight of Israel's journey, all right? Some of you probably remember studying the Pentateuch and looking at these things in detail. Maybe you may remember some of Bill Moseley's classes, and I know that I do. I know a few years ago, David took us, the congregation, through the Old Testament on Wednesday nights. Really, really good study. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 34 then. Let's go right to the end before we get into Joshua. Deuteronomy chapter 34. And I'm going to ask someone to read verses 9 through 12. Last three verses of the chapter. Deuteronomy 34, 9 through 12. Who's got it? Wes.
And Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, and Moses had laid his hands on him. So the people of Israel obeyed him, and did as the Lord had commanded Moses. And there has not arisen a prophet since in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. None like him for all the signs and the wonders that the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land, and for all the mighty power and all the great deeds of terror that Moses did in the sight of all Israel.
It is said that reputation is what people think of you, and character is what God knows about you. I don't know if I worded that exactly right, but that's how I remember it. What I want to do now is I want to spend some time. Our two key figures in Joshua are God and Joshua, but there's two key figures in the Old Testament that stand out. Well, other than Abraham, and that's Moses, and then followed by Joshua. What I want to do now is I want to talk about Moses because of these last verses. You know, when you read the first chapter of Joshua, you'd think he's still alive. I don't know how many times he's mentioned, even though I know in the first verse it says Moses is dead, but you almost feel like he's still with them because of the way the writing is. But what I want us to do is I want you to think for a moment that Israel's success was dependent upon good leadership. Would you agree? Yes, I know God had to be with them, all right? But who did God send to lead them? Just think about it for a moment, all right? We can go down the line, Abraham, Moses, Joshua, we get into the judges, we get into the kings, we get so many things, so many leaders to look at, but God always provided leaders to help the people. God never intended, correct me if I'm wrong, but God never intended for us to go it alone. You look at the family, the leader of the family, the leaders in the church being the elders, all right? Wherever we look in life, we see leaders. And that was always has been God's purpose. And I want to keep that in mind. Because what I want to look at now is I want to look at some character traits of Moses that I think really stand out, and at least get me excited. Because when I read that verse, Moses, my servant, is dead, I just stop in my tracks. I can't keep reading until I stop and think about Moses. Because he did so much to bring the people up to this point. So let's give Moses a little bit of credit tonight and take a journey with him. I want you to open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11. I think this is probably one of the best summaries of the life of Moses in a few verses. Without going verse by verse through the whole Bible, which we're not going to do because we only have a few minutes in class. But let's go to Hebrews chapter 11. And I'm going to ask someone to read 23 through 29. And we're going to kind of break this down and highlight some things in Moses' life. Hebrews 11, 23 through 29. Who's got it? Tyler.
By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood, so the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. By faith, the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land, but the Egyptians, when they attempted to do the same, were drowned.
Okay. So let's look at some things. First thing I notice, let's go to verse 24 of Hebrews chapter 11. And I put in here, Moses said no. Said no to what? What did he refuse to be called there in that passage? If you got it open, read it. He refused to do what? Say it again.
Son of Pharaoh's daughter.
Okay, the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, as you think about that, I put some notes up here. Kenny did I enjoyed all the classes on apologetics last quarter. But when Kenny talked about culture, that just opened up my eyes to some things. In fact, I told him afterwards, you've given me a lot of sermon ideas. But with that in mind, what was the culture that Moses was raised in?
Egyptian.
Egyptian, right. He was raised in the Egyptian culture, all right? I don't know what your knowledge is of Egyptian culture. I didn't dive into it. But what kind of lifestyle do you think he led, being the son of Pharaoh's daughter? Well, what was life like? What do you think?
I imagine people ate back and had people feed him grapes and olives all day long.
That's kind of my image. Jeff?
Acts chapter 7, verse 22, Stephen said, "And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds." So he was famous. He was a big man in Egypt.
He was a famous Egyptian. Even though he wasn't an Egyptian, he was a Hebrew, all right? Exactly. And I'm going somewhere with this, all right? I want us, when we look at that verse and he says no to being part of Pharaoh's family, there's more to that, all right? So we have to stop and think about it. So exactly, he was drenched in Egyptian culture, all right? And I'm glad you brought that verse up. His mother was an Egyptian princess. I just want to kind of put this together as you're thinking about this. Raised him as her own. I'm not saying that, you know, she was his mother by adoption, all right? But would you say that she had a relationship with him? Yeah, I would think she was very close to him. I think there's enough to suggest that they were very close. And as Jeff pointed out, he was well-versed in Egyptian culture. He was a man of wisdom. He was well-known. And then over in Exodus, earlier on in Exodus, he's out and about and somebody talks to him. And who is it? God. God tells him to do what? Anybody remember? You can summarize it. You'll probably get it right. What did God tell Moses to do? He's out there with the Hebrews. What did he tell him to do? Anybody remember that? Yes, Wes?
Go lead the people out of Egypt.
Thank you. Easy summary. Go lead the people. What did he do? He did that. All right? In other words, Moses, influenced by Egyptian culture and so many things, did what? Said no. I'm not going to do this. So, and that's over in Exodus chapter 3. I have it written down right here. And when I think about that, I think this is the leader we're talking about. He's getting ready to go and lead a broken people. They're big, as somebody pointed out, but they're under slavery. They are broken. They are beaten down. And he's going to go out and he's going to lead these people. He's going to leave what is so good and so comfortable. And let's just take Tyler's scene. He's going to leave the couch as he's getting fed grapes and raisins or whatever it is. And he's going to get up and he's going to go and lead these people. That stands out for me. Yes.
Moses
Well, and something that was really cool that we did this last summer was we went and saw the King Tut exhibit.
Oh, yeah.
Which, of course, is very Egyptian. And it wasn't just leaving, as Tyler said, the grapes and the raisins or whatever. He was leaving unbelievable wealth.
Yes.
These are people that had gold and made things out of gold that were so intricate that it rivals what we make today. They made things out of ivory and silver that were astounding. The exhibit was amazing. It lasts till January if anybody has a chance to go see it. But it was just, as Logan and I were walking through it, it's mind-blowing to think that Moses walked during this time. He had this. His bow and arrow was probably made of gold and so intricately carved
right. That
you could make out the tiniest leopard on it. He had these things, and he left those things when God told him to go.
Right. Well put. Well put. And so my simple question is, would that be a challenge? For me, it would be. Would that be a challenge? It would be. Carolyn.
And I think God chose the right leader at the right time.
That's right.
No other Hebrew could have approached Pharaoh. When Pharaoh was going through the way that Moses did. And he, because he was of Pharaoh's house, and he was a Hebrew, he was the perfect person. And I think it's amazing to see how God works all of that out and how tragic it would have been to put your baby in a basket on the river, to have that kind of faith and how hard, but then to see God take that and rise up somebody that is going to be able to take the people, you know, you can see it in Esther, you can see it in Paul. I see a lot of comparisons between Paul and Moses that, you know, God picks the right leader for the right time.
That's right. Second thing I put up here is Moses made good choices. Now, this gets back to his decision that we just talked about to lead the people. And I mentioned a moment ago the condition the people were in. And I, like I said, all we know is that there was a lot of them and they were under Egyptian bondage. So we know their conditions or have a good idea what their condition, what their life was like. And here he's getting ready to lead the people. Of course, then we have the 10 plagues. And the power of God being used or seen through Moses. The reason why I brought this up is, and just more of an application, is I really enjoy character studies of the Bible. And one of the things that I always learn or draw from them in character studies is the decisions that they make. Now, they made bad ones. Moses made bad decisions. Abraham did. We can go right down the line. That's not our focus. But I'm always mindful of the decisions and the wise choices they made against great opposition. And the reason why I bring that up, and maybe the parents coming out of me right now, but wise choices are difficult in a world where our morality is declining rapidly. Let me just put it that way. And this is something that's been on my mind a lot, especially with still teenagers at home and one Carolyn and I trying to encourage our kids to make wise decisions. So the question I asked for you, you don't have to answer this, but if you want to discuss it, we can. Are we cultivating a reservoir of wise choices for our children? In other words, are we making every opportunity to show them a Moses? To show them a Joshua? I tell you what, as I was preparing this study, I think Joshua is a great study for young people. There are some things that I'm pulling out of this study right now that I would love to share with our high school and college age classes, because I think the wealth of knowledge, the wealth of information that they can gain from a study would be very, very beneficial to them. When I think of Moses, I'm thinking about the fact of Moses, Joshua, whoever. Here's all these decisions that we have to make in life. All right? And I say that because right now our kids are facing some big decisions, you know, and Carolyn and I are getting nervous and scared. At the same time, our kids are coming in and making wise choices. And I can only hope and pray that continues, and I can only hope and pray that we have built a good bounty of information for them to help them to make wise choices. Just a little side note there. I think that's really important. Thoughts and comments as we're rolling through this. All right, let's look at the next one there. Moses displayed wisdom. Let's look at the 26th verse of Hebrews chapter 11. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking towards the reward. What is meant by the reproach of Christ? Maybe look at the word reproach. Let's get that defined first. What do we mean? What does the writer mean by the reproach of Christ? Think of another word for reproach is defamation. Think of defamation of character. Reproach of Christ. What comes to your mind? Maybe look at it. Yes, Jeff.
Well, Moses, he was going to be looked down on because he's identifying himself with the Israelites instead of identifying himself with the Egyptians. You know, it's like in our culture, there's even today, we've got haves and have-nots. And
right.
There are certain groups that if you're identified with, that there's a stigma that can be associated with that.
That's right. And I think you're exactly right. That's what I have, the similarities. Not to say that he bore the same reproach, but the point is, in like manner, there was a similar reproach. He, as Jeff pointed out, he chose to go with the Hebrews, with God's people, rather than stay in the comfort zone. All right. So in this case, looking at verse 26, he considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, as we just talked about it. Wes? Yes.
And he was accused of maybe usurping what he shouldn't have taken. There were times that people had to be corrected or punished because Moses was doing the job that God had given him to do. You know, they would say, well, who made you a ruler over us?
That's right.
And I think we see that also with Jesus. He was blasphemed because people said, well, you can't be the Son of God. And he suffered for that, even though that's who he really was. He had a right to place his stuff.
That's right. I mean, if we were to stop and count how many times the people murmured against Moses, there's quite a few instances in there where that the people murmured against him. So these are the reproaches. But I have a question here. He was looking towards the reward. What reward do you think Moses was looking toward? Doesn't say. I would just like your thoughts on this. Jeff?
Well, we know he did look toward the promised land. I'm not saying that's all he looked to, but that was a bitter pill for him to swallow when he wasn't able to cross into it. He was very disappointed about that.
That's right.
Deuteronomy.
That's right. Some suggest that, you know, he was looking to the Christ. I don't agree with that. I'm not convinced that he had full view of that. You might correct me if I'm wrong. I battle that a little bit. But I think he knew, I think in his spiritual condition, meaning a very good condition, I think you're right. He looked to the land, and I think he actually had a spiritual connect, or looking to God, looking to the eternal reward as well. Yes, Jerry?
That Moses met regularly with God, and God did speak to him face to face. So, I mean, he may very well have known more of the picture than we know. But
sure.
Even if he didn't, I mean, it's we know that Moses wrote the first five books, but sometimes, like, I'm not conscious of the fact that Moses wrote the first five books. He knew the story.
Right.
Going back to the promise made to Abraham and how it unfolded up to that point, he knew. So he may not have understood literally about Jesus, but he understood that this is part of a big plan.
Right.
There's something coming that I can't even comprehend.
That's right. And even in his difficulty to describe it, he was willing to do all these things. Dan.
And we need to remember, too, that his mother raised him and taught him all the things about the Hebrews. So taught him these things. He knew these things. Otherwise, he couldn't have made these choices because he wouldn't have known.
Right.
And then later on, of course, you have God directing him and speaking to him. But that was an important part of her being able to nurse him and train him up to probably even 7 or 8 years old. They don't know the same time.
Right. Right. Thoughts? I see a hand somewhere. All right, we'll keep going here. So next thing I wanted to look at, kind of along those lines, is Moses saw the reward. Look at Hebrews 11, verse 16. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Again, I think when I think about this, Moses, yes, desired the promised land. He desired the better place. And he did this amidst the failings of God's people and his own failings, which we'll talk about here in a few moments. But he did this anyway, even amidst all the failings of the people, he went forward to do this. And this is the kind of leader that you're looking for. You want a leader who's not going to take his eye off the goal. Now, maybe the children of Israel didn't see this at the time, all right? Maybe some of them did, but it was important part of his character. Another thing that stands out about Moses that I didn't put up in this section here, you know, leading the people can be a difficult task. I've never led this many people. I think I've been a supervisor over 15 people at one time in a machine shop, and that was the extent of my leadership skills. But I can't imagine leading this multitude of people, all right? Do you remember over in Exodus 18, and I don't have to just run over there right now, but he was getting ready to have all the people in front of him, and he was going to start dealing with all their issues. And who comes up on the scene and gives him advice? His father-in-law. His father-in-law, Jethro. See, there are something good to say about father-in-laws. I have a great father-in-law. His father-in-law stepped in and says, "What are you doing?" In other words, I'm going to give you some advice. I'm going to help you so you can be more successful. Again, I think it's just another character trait of Moses that stands out. Moses got back up. Not back up, but he got back up again. Did Moses make some mistakes? Any stand out for you? Any mistakes of Moses stand out for you? Is there any? Yes, Adam. There you go. Killed the Egyptian. What else?
When he struck them from the water.
Right.
And took the credit for him instead of giving it to God.
That one cost him, didn't it? It did. Let's talk about that for a few moments. I want you to imagine. First of all, go to Deuteronomy 32 while I'm talking. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 32. And I want you to imagine for a moment seeing the promised land, but unable to go in. I want you to let this sink in for Moses for a moment. Be Moses, all right? Just wear his sandals for a moment, all right? You have led these people out of Egyptian bondage. You've displayed God's power, or God has used you to display his power. You've dealt with murmurings, you've dealt with issues, you've dealt with problems, but you've led these people all the way through, and you can see the promised land, but you can't go in. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 32, and I'll just read verses 51 and 52. Let me back up, verse 50. And die on the mountain which you go up, and be gathered to your people, and Aaron your brother died in Mount Or, and was gathered to his people. Because you broke faith with me in the midst of the people of Israel in the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, and because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people of Israel, for you shall see the land before you, but you shall not go there into the land that I am giving to the people of Israel. I'm going to ask the question, is that fair? You don't have to answer it. But just... Yes, Jake.
God thought it was fair.
Good answer. That's exactly right. God thought it was fair. And I think that's the answer right there. But I have to admit, sometimes I struggle with that. I look at that and I say, look at all that he did. God says, because of that mistake, you're not going to enter into the promised land. All right? Jeff.
In Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 37, when Moses looks back at that, He says, even with me, the Lord was angry on your account, and so you shall not go in there. And I think what Moses is saying is that the reason he struck the rock is because he was afraid for the people. And that's kind of a warning to us as well.
That's right.
We can't break faith with God even to try to, for the reason of trying to help out someone else. But his motive in doing what was wrong on that occasion was his devotion to the people.
Right.
Greater than his good devotion point. To God.
That's right. Good point. And as Jay pointed out, it was still wrong. So I have a question. Is Moses a man worth following? Do you agree? I would hope that we would all follow Moses. grateful that's not the time frame that we're in. But let me wrap up this section with this passage, because there was one better, wasn't there? Hebrews talks about the better things. One preacher talks about the lettuce of Hebrews. Let us therefore go forward. Let us move on. Let us... But Hebrews is really a book about better things. And I just wanted to read here from Hebrews chapter 3, verses 5 through 6, where the writer is talking about Moses being over God's house, but Christ being over everything. Moses was faithful in all of God's house as a servant to testify to the things that were to be spoken later. But Christ is faithful over God's house as a son, and we are his house, if indeed we hold fast our confidence and our boasting in our hope. Hebrews 3, 5 through 6. This is why we do what we do. Got a few minutes. I'm going to look at a couple other things here. But this is why we study. This is why we do the things that we do, because our hope is in Christ. I told you on Sunday I was going to talk about four funerals. So let's open our Bibles to Joshua chapter 1, if you would. With the remaining time, I think we got 5 minutes, looks like. And this has to do with the impact or the validity, and that's not a good word, the seriousness of God's promises. Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now let's just stop there. I brought this up last week, and this will be in one of the questions for this Sunday. So we've already discussed how great he is. We've talked about there's none like him. But now he's dead. So what do you do now that your leader is dead and you're facing a raging river? The river is Jordan. And why is it raging? It says there. It's in peak season. All right. It says later on when we get into the crossing of the river, it'll point out that the Jordan River was in peak season. All right. So here you are, you're getting ready to cross. Here you go, and your leader is dead. What do you do now? Have a funeral? Quit? Do you cry? Look at the second half of verse 2. All right? Second half of verse 2 says, therefore, rise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. What does God do when Moses dies? He hands the leadership off to Joshua, all right? And he says, this is what I promised you. We're not stopping here for anything. We're not taking a break. We're not gonna you know, get all lost in what happened here. We are going to take this land, Carolyn.
They did in Deuteronomy. After Moses was buried, the people wept for 30 days before they went
right
into the land. So they did take pause to consider the gravity of what happened.
Right. And his promises do not hinge on human achievement. That's the point I wanted to make. Is that God's promises do not hinge on our achievement. How great we may be or may think we are. They do not hinge on that. And it doesn't end with the funeral. God continues on. We got 2 minutes. Look at Joshua chapter 24. Go to the very end. Very end. Read real quickly verses 29 through 33. After these things, Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old, and they buried him in his own inheritance. Verse 31, Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua and had known all the work that the Lord did for Israel. As for the bones of Joseph, with the people of Israel brought up from Egypt, they buried him at them at Shechem in the piece of land that Jacob bought for the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money. It became an inheritance of the descendants of Joseph. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died. And they buried him at Gibeah, the town of Phinehas, his son, which had been given to him in the hill country of Ephraim. What is significant about those three grave sites? Where were they buried?
In the promised land.
They were buried in the promised land. What does that have to do with God's promise? What does that have to do with how they viewed God's promise? That's the point there. All right? Joseph made sure that his bones were carried there. Couple of passages there that points out that. Moses made sure Joseph over in Hebrews 11 and Exodus 13 verse 19. All right. The point is, these great leaders, these great men, these priests believed in the promised land, and they wanted their bones buried in the land that they took possession of. I think that's a great statement to believing in God's promises. We're out of time. So for Sunday, here's lesson one up here. It is going out in email. Again, your assignment is chapter one. So I hope that you'll have some time to look at this, and we'll generate some good discussion. So thank you very much for your time.